Now, Ask Dr. Love with psychotherapist, author, love and relationship expert Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. For expert advice on love and relationships, call into the show at 888-463-6748. That's 888-GO-FOR-IT. Or you can submit your question online at AskDrLove.com. Now, here's Dr. Love.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and it's my pleasure to be with you again today. Today, I'm talking about menopause in crisis. My author guest is Linda Wisda. She wrote the book Menopause in Crisis, The Summer I Lost My Mind, and it's a memoir that is much more than her simply telling a story about her life. It's really also a book that helps you know how to deal with menopause in crisis. And now Linda, she authored dozens of books over the years, only one of which was published, and it wasn't until after she had her menopausal crisis that she found her authentic voice in memoir writing. So let me introduce you to Linda, and we'll go from there. Linda Wisda, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Dr. Turndorf. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm thrilled to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. You asked me right before we went on air, how do you want me to refer to you? And I said, you know, you can call me you, whatever you want to call me. And you just opted for Dr. Turndorf. So I feel very official. But I'm sure as we get to know each other more, it might just change.
I'm sure it'll be all sorts of things, yes.
So let's just start with the question, why did you write the memoir? Because, you know, a lot of women go through horrendous menopausal experiences. So what was your motivation for actually making your story public?
Well, there were a lot of things. I think the first thing that inspired me was the spiritual nature of my crisis, the spiritual nature and the way it seemed to come with a sort of intention, an intention to help me heal. When I first started looking back over some of my dreams while I was writing, and I discovered that one that I talk about in the beginning of the book, in the premonition, I could see that I had actually received a warning about my crisis before it even began. And I didn't know, did this warning come from my subconscious, from some dissociated part of myself? But it seemed clear that I was being guided in some way through this experience. And I found this fascinating enough to try to explore more through my writing. Mm-hmm. Another thing that inspired me tremendously were the other women I met during my crisis whose lives had begun to fall apart during perimenopause. Women who, before midlife, they were functioning just fine, but then when perimenopause hit, they began experiencing all sorts of challenges like mine, and their lives came to a complete standstill. Some of these women were still battling these issues long into their 70s, 30 years after menopause. I thought this was heartbreaking, and I was hoping that since I was able to turn my crisis into a healing experience, that by writing about it, I might be able to help women going through similar things, some kind of reassurance, guidance, something to help them know they're not alone.
That's wonderful.
Then, of course, yes. Then, of course, there's just the healing aspects of the creating writing process, which I'm sure you know about. I something bad happens, I write about it. Something good, I write about it. I just write. So those were the things that inspired me.
It's true. When my husband was ripped from me so unexpectedly through the bee sting, the only way that I could survive was by writing. And I just wrote morning, noon, and night when I wasn't seeing patients, when I wasn't doing my other work, writing my columns. I wrote and wrote. And to me, the writing is... it is such a miraculous gift. It offers you such a gift of healing. You know, and the thing is, when we are struck by the freight trains that life that life forces us to meet head on, they are really, I think, spiritual lessons in disguise. Yeah. They really are. And if you're able to get past the experience, the initial reaction of, oh, poor me, and I'm a victim, and why me, and God hates me, and all of that, to the, wait a minute, what is this that I am supposed to be learning that is going to help me evolve in my own spiritual development and then ultimately that I can bring to the world?
Yes.
And that's what you've done. That's what you've done.
I'm trying. It was
we're all works in progress. You know?
Yes, exactly. It was just such a tremendous experience experience. It was a transpersonal experience, so it was this other dimensional kind of thing that I was really very aware of as it was happening, but because of how physical the challenges were, I mean, the racing heart, the skyrocketing blood pressure, the shaking, whatever was happening with my eyes, I thought I had some terrible physical disease and I was going to die.
And what, describe what happened to your eyes.
Well, my pupils, I couldn't see. I couldn't see anything. Everything was a blur, and my pupils shrunk down to these tiny little pinhead things. And you know, as I say in the memoir, it's one of the later chapters, this was so horrendous, and I was in such a state, I would actually go into the hallway closet with a mirror and a flashlight, and I would flash the light into my eyes to see if they would still dilate.
Right, but you know, and then you get hypochondriacal, which I know that's a big word for you. Think you're dying of some horrible, horrible disease, you know.
There seemed to be no other explanation. I went from doctor to doctor, and no one could tell me what was happening to me. And that's another reason why I wanted to write this, because then through my healing and through discovering all of these things, and I then went on to look at Stanislav Grof's work in Spiritual Emergency, I discovered that I had a type of spiritual crisis. This was a kundalini type crisis, and I had, it was 2 years after the whole experience that I found all the symptoms I was having, and how much easier my experience would have been had I known about this early on, and I would have known what direction to go in. I was just running pell-mell off any cliff I could find, just for relief, for to know what was going on, something. It was maddening, just maddening.
Right, right. Now, you said kundalini crisis. A lot of people may have heard of kundalini yoga, but I'm sure that people listening don't know what a kundalini crisis is.
Right. There's a lot of different types of spiritual crises. People will have out-of-body experiences, certainly a near-death experience. They'll have experiences with the paranormal. And when I first started reading Grof's work, actually, and I was reading through those experiences, I was like, oh, that's not it, that's not it. I knew my experience was so physical. And when I hit the part on kundalini crisis, I was like, that's it. That is definitely it. So the kundalini, and I think it's difficult to talk about this in an Eastern sense, because when I was studying to be a yoga teacher before my crisis, I read kundalini crisis, whatever, well, that won't happen to me. I'm not in the East. So I figured I was safe from all of that. But this is just a type of spiritual crisis that can happen to anyone. I know people who never studied yoga and had this kind of thing. But in the Eastern philosophies, the energy of the body sits at the base of the spine. You can think about it in a spiral, sort of like a snake thing. And under certain circumstances, for me, the trigger were the hormonal changes of menopause, and I had a daily yoga practice. Something will ignite that energy, and it starts moving through your body. In Eastern teachings, it will be moving through the chakras from the pelvis up into the navel, up into the chest. But it starts, to me, there was no organization to that. It just started blasting through my body chaotically. That's all I could identify, was absolute chaos.
I think I've been living in a kundalini crisis since I was born. No, I was born 3 months early. So most people who are born that early, they don't live. You know, yeah. I was only 1 pound, and many of my organs didn't form right. And so, among other things, I had these crazy, delirious 106-degree fevers for the first 10 years of my life. So, and I talk about this in the book that I have coming out in July. It's called Love Never Dies, where I talk about my spiritual reconnection with my husband after he left his body when he was stung by the bee. And I describe the fact that, you know, apparently the high fevers, when you read the accounts of mystics and mediums, many of them develop the ability after one high fever. And here I was baking at 106 every month of my life. So I was always mostly in the spirit world.
I totally get
what you're talking about.
And you never, because in our culture we don't talk about these experiences. I think there was a time long ago when people knew these things happened and you could accept them more easily and know what was going on. I would be laying down and I would have such electricity going through my body, I would be like dragged up into a sitting position. And I would try to lay down and my body just kept jerking up into these things. I was like, I'm dying.
You were being jolted by, it's like as if, you know, they were like spiritual paddles jolting you awake, you know?
Yeah.
You know, like when they put the paddles on you to resuscitate you, you were sort of being given a spiritual resuscitation with all this energy shooting through you.
Right. Oh, my gosh. It was just the most bizarre thing.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. And I just wanted to know what was happening. How am I going to fix this? And I was dying. I told people I knew I was dying. I've read... Also, it was in Lisa Nella's work regarding the Kundalini experience that when you don't receive the right guidance and the right information, that it can manifest into a type of schizophrenic-like condition. And this is certainly where I went. I'm a high-strung kind of type A person anyway, and once things got blown up and I went to so many doctors and I couldn't get any answers, I started thinking I was schizophrenic. I was looking up schizophrenia on the internet. I went to the psychiatric hospital.
Except you were too old. That was the thing that they should have said to you, that schizophrenia usually blossoms in late adolescence. So you don't just become schizophrenic in your 40s, you know?
Yes, you do. That was part of the whole thing that was, because I'm a researchaholic. And I went on the internet when I started thinking I was schizophrenic, and I believe it was on the website for athealth.com. It's in my book. And I found information that for women, there is a second peak for schizophrenia.
Ah, when their hormones go crazy. That's the typical Western labeling crap. They're calling it schizophrenia and putting labels on people instead of your hormones are making you crazy.
Exactly. It's a spiritual crisis that happens during menopause. And because most of our culture doesn't understand that, it's got to be labeled as some sort of psychiatric condition. So it's, boom, schizophrenia. And I think what happens is that women get stuck in their crisis experience, that instead of being given the tools to resolve that crisis, they get stuck there because they don't know what's happening, and they end up going down all sorts of paths that don't allow them to release the energy that's created the crisis.
So that's an interesting concept, the releasing of the energy. So I would assume, since you're speaking about energy release, you're talking about physical practices to release the energy.
Yes, definitely. Well, and especially in cases when there's been abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, because certainly if trauma is going to go in through the body, it's got to come out through the body.
Right. This is we're going to talk more about this in the upcoming segments, because obviously, you know, it's a hard thing for people to understand. Sometimes I use the analogy of the body being a closed vessel, and there's only so much. Well, I actually say we're like blivets. That's 50 pounds of poop in a 5-pound bag.
Okay. You want to take poop?
How much can you put in there before the bag starts to fray? And you can't, it just doesn't fall out your ear. It doesn't go away by itself. So if you're not actively working to free up your cells from all the garbage and the cellular memory of past traumas, you become the blivet and the bag breaks. And then that's when the poop hits the fan.
That's exactly.
Right. So I'm going to take a brief break.
Okay.
When I come back, we're going to do my quickie segment. You can guess what that's about. Be back with you in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. AskDrLove.com is the web's premier relationship advice site since 1996. Visit AskDrLove.com to search thousands of free relationship advice articles on any relationship issue you may have. Or you can submit a question to her free advice column. However, if you're listening live, why not call in? Don't be shy. Dr. Turndorf wants to help you, and this is a unique chance to get a personal answer from one of today's most respected experts. So, if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888 888- 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. Now back to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, PhD. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf and today I'm talking about menopause in crisis with author Linda Wisda. This is the time in the show where I do my Dr. Love's quickie, my short little segment. And I always, Linda, I do some little tweets to remind people about the topic and the message of the show of the week. So I'm just going to lay a few tweets on you and everybody who's listening. Let me find them. See, I can't memorize my own tweets. I guess I should, but I can't. So if menopause makes you want to holler because you're too hot under the collar, know that you can make the inferno go. Okay. If you don't want to hit the hay, menopause may be at play. We haven't even gotten to that part yet. Want an escape clause for menopause? Is menopause bringing out those claws? And if you think you've left your childhood behind, menopause causes an emotional rewind. We're going to be talking about that. Does lack of sleep make you want to weep? Is menopause putting your sanity on pause? Are you a very hot mama? Well, it could be emotional trauma. Menopause has a way of bringing old scars into play. And if menopause is making you want to crawl in a hole, old scars may be playing a role. And when menopause has you sick in body, childhood trauma may actually be making you feel so shoddy. So
awesome. Those are awesome. So, you got to make magnets for the refrigerator.
I know. I should do just a Dr. Love's little tweet t-shirts, you know. It's 8 o'clock. Do you know where your inner child is? You know, it's crazy.
You know, and there's a whole other book for you, you know, like the life aspects, the menopause chapter, the grief chapter, and just have all those picky little phrases.
I know. I guess I should do a compilation of the best of the best tweets. Like one of the ones that I did that was crazy was I was talking about how to tell the difference between love and lust, and I said never use your Peter as a love meter because your Peter can steer you wrong. So a guy writes to me on YouTube, "Thanks, Dr. Love. My mother never told me that."
Oh, God. See, you got to do it. There's another book idea for you.
Yeah, there you go. So I'm talking a lot about the link between old scars and menopausal crisis. So we were alluding to that before we took the break, that old scars, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, talk about how that's connected to the upheaval later in life when you start menopause and perimenopause.
Well, it's interesting. I started to discover information about that. When I came out of the hospital, I was still in a state, still bouncing off the walls or whatever, and I was going to therapy, making some progress, and my sons wanted to know what to get me for my birthday, and I couldn't find the book I wanted. I reached over, I said, "Here, The Wisdom of Menopause by Dr. Christian Northrup. Buy me this." And that sat there for the longest time. I thought, well, it'll have stuff about diet and exercise in it. Finally, one day, I picked this up. And Dr. Northrup was talking exactly about what was happening to me. In her book, I found out how the hormones, our hormones actually function as a sort of inner guidance system for us in our lives. When we experience PMS, postpartum issues, even seasonal affective disorder, these are for a woman, her hormones letting her know that she has issues to deal with. Wounds she needs to heal. All of the tumult that we feel during PMS, which I had terrible PMS growing up, it's actually real emotions that we have from things that we have stuffed down into our minds and bodies and haven't dealt with. And of course, when we're PMSing, those hormones are coming and going. So we go in, we go out, and we have some relief. When perimenopause hits, which Dr. Northrup calls the mother of all wake-up calls, those hormones are receding for good. And I believe it's in her book where she likens it to a lake. And you see this wonderful lake and all the waters, all this wonderful hormones. And then when that goes away, underneath that water, sitting on the bottom are old refrigerators, old tires, whatever garbage you've collected through your life, that now is just the time to heal. It's not that you did anything wrong in all those other years. Women are hardwired through our hormones to be nurturing and taking care of others, taking care of others through our careers, through our homemaker activities. And once perimenopause hits, we need to start looking inside to care for ourselves and get rid of all of this stuff so that we can then go out into the world as a different type of mother, career person, healer, whatever we're being called to.
That's a wonderful description that you gave, because it's interesting, because as your reproductive hormones dwindle, you're saying now we are being called to put less energy out to nurturing others and more energy to ourselves to heal and nurture ourselves, because we're losing our reproductive function. It's an interesting thing. And also what you're saying is that the hormones really are a mirror. They act as a mirror that reflect back to us what's imbalanced on the inside. And they just knock us slightly off our emotional horse, just enough so that they wake us up and say, wait a minute, this isn't right. This just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Like I said, I had horrendous, horrendous PMS growing up from the time I was like 9 years old. And I spent all of those years looking for ways to combat it. I found out that eating dairy made it worse, so I stopped eating dairy. I found natural progesterone cream, and I was using that. And it's funny, you know, just as I got to a point where I was like, okay, now this period is my friend, this friend said, okay, check it out now. Here's something else for you to figure out.
You know, it's like this old lithograph that I saw. I'm sure everybody has seen it. You see this poor little dog that's drowning, and it's a horrible storm, and he's clutching at the edge of a little island trying to get himself onto dry land. And that is so much a metaphor of life. Just when you think you hit dry land, bang, another wave knocks you on your butt again, back in the water. Here you go again. More spiritual crisis, more personal growth, more healing required. All right, I'm going to take a brief break, and we'll be back in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you like what you're hearing, you can learn about Dr. Turndorf's techniques for turning conflict into connection and healing in her critically acclaimed, groundbreaking book, Till Death Do Us Part, Unless I Kill You First, a step-by-step guide for resolving relationship conflict. Find out more about this book and read a free excerpt by visiting AskDrLove.com. This is Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. And if you have a question for her, please call in now at 888-463-6748. This show is for you, the listeners, so please give her a call now. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, Ph.D. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again, and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm Dr. Jamie Turndorf, and I'm talking with my wonderful guest, Linda Wisda, who wrote Menopause in Crisis. Linda, we were talking before we took the break about the link between childhood sexual abuse and the upheaval that you experienced when you went into perimenopause. So can you talk a little bit more about this? Because these events, they occurred long before they got buried. They were in that emotional, you know, buried cesspool. And then how do you see the link between that trauma and then the physical experiences that you suffered, the pounding heart, the blood pressure, the shaking? How do you make the connection?
Well, it's interesting. As you know, I mean, this is dissociation. It's a very complex mechanism. And depending on the triggering event, it ranges from the simple daydreaming we do when we're bored all the way to having completely separate aspects to our identity due to acts of abuse. And that's what was once known as multiple personality, dissociative identity disorder. And when we dissociate the memories and the experiences, we're also dissociating the feelings that we were having physically and emotionally. And I think that the most significant and disturbing way that my dissociation played into my crisis were the panic attacks and suicidal thoughts that I was having. And it's like I mentioned in my memoir, I'd already been struggling with panic attacks for years, usually while driving or driving over this particular bridge. And by the time of my crisis, this bridge panic was so severe that I would have to turn the car around and go home. I can remember this one time I was trying to take my sons across the bridge to get one of the latest video games. And before I even got to the bridge, the panic was so bad I had to stop the car. And I tried again and again. I so wanted to do this for my sons. My sons were in the car, and I couldn't do it. I had to turn around and go home. And I felt terrible, my son seeing me like that. And I felt horrible about myself as a person. I felt useless and embarrassed. And it wasn't until after my crisis that I was able to realize that what I was experiencing with this driving across the bridge, the reason all this panic would come up, was that I thought I was going to stop the car and jump off the bridge. And this, I didn't want to kill myself. I knew I didn't want to kill myself in the present moment, but this dissociated part of me, this part that was, that still was holding on to all those emotions and those physical feelings, was still feeling suicidal.
Right. So here, this is very interesting what you're saying. And I explain to people who are suffering with panic and anxiety and suicidal thoughts as well, what we're looking at is buried rage. And you don't realize that you're in a rage, so the rage morphs into something else if you're prone to depression, anxiety, panic. Mm-hmm. In fact, panic and anxiety is like a fire alarm. It's a smoke alarm that your psyche is warning you, saying, warning, 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 rage is breaking through the surface. Warning, mm-hmm. there's a killer on the loose. Mm-hmm. So people don't realize that. They just become aware of the panic. It's called signal anxiety. And even the suicidal thoughts are tied to, I want to kill somebody, but I'm not aware of it, so I turn the murderous rage back on myself, and I want to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I had a woman, this was 30 years ago, I was on staff at a hospital here in the area where I work, and she was hospitalized with intense panic and anxiety, mm-hmm. and she always got it, not when she was crossing a bridge, but when she would go supermarket shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to her, listen, there's something about the supermarket shopping mm-hmm. that is enraging you. Right. And then she was immediately able to say, oh, yeah, I'm furious. My husband won't help me with the chores. So once she got in touch with the rage, her mm-hmm. panic dissipated. And this is so important for women, because women especially are so socialized to be the nice girls and the good girls. Yeah. And you're not angry.
Right.
And then you stuff
right.
it down, and out it comes in the anxiety and the panic. So now mm-hmm. to come back to your connection with the sexual abuse, where does all that rage go when you're being incested and abused?
Right.
It goes,
right.
you know, so that was the piece that it's like the blivy. How long can I shove it down? I can't
yeah.
shove it down anymore. And certainly you couldn't become enraged at your abuser. I mean, you're already being abused.
Yeah.
What
yeah,
happens if you become enraged? You'll get abused worse. So you've suffered incest
mm-hmm.
in your early life from a father, a brother.
A father.
It's you know, it's a dreadful story, you know, what you went through. And so no wonder all of this was coming to the surface. So were the memories and the feelings completely buried and disassociated from your conscious self? And then when you started having all the physical symptoms and the panic, did the memories come flying back out with the feelings? Is that what happened?
The memories started coming up. Well, and it's interesting, and I know I started having menopausal symptoms now that I'm able to look back and realize what they were, because I started with the hot flashes when I would sweat and feel like I was going to cry and whatever when I was in my late 20s. And I think it's because I had so much energy in my body that I was starting to manifest things so far back. I started to remember, it's in the August chapter of my book, I started to remember the abuse through a dream in 1993. And all of that stuff did come up. I had this dream, and I woke up with the same feelings that I would get at night as a child. I was living with a man at the time, and he was there. And as I was waking up from the dream, I was saying, get off of me, Dad, get off of me. And had I been alone, I could have just dissociated that, buried it. But this person was there, and he said, what happened? So
yeah.
I told him about the dream, and I was trying to close the store and blah, 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 blah. And I was telling him how it would bring up the same feelings I had as a child, that everything in my room was moving in slow motion and felt very heavy. And as I said this to this man I was living with, I started to cry and sweat and shake. I was a wreck.
All
and
those he, feelings.
He said to me, did your father rape you? And as I say in my book, I searched my mind for an answer, every corner of my mind, but I had nothing. I had nothing but what had come up at that point.
And yeah, this is typical, yeah.
And as the years went by, more and more stuff came up. And then it's funny, in the memoir, I have an encounter with a friend of mine here when I was going through a really bad time. And I asked her, how long does menopause last? And without hesitation, she said to me, 21 years. I was like, okay.
You know, I'm only 21?
Right. And then she said to me, 7 going in, 7 during, and 7 on the way out. So after when I was writing the book, I went back and I looked at 7 years before my crisis in 1998. And I saw that I was having so many dreams about my abuse at that time. And I could see that, I don't know, was she kidding? Was she whatever? But I could see that for me, there was truth to what she had said. That this experience of this deep, deep healing had started in 1998, the really intense part of it. 2005 was the total blow up. And then between that, and then I went through the crisis and stuff. And now I'm looking at it that I'm in the 7 years going out. That's what I'm hoping I'm on the way out.
But yeah, you are. And the thing I just want to be clear on for everybody who's listening is that sometimes the physical symptoms are the conversion of an emotional trauma.
Right.
So that you didn't necessarily remember all the memory of the rape, but your body remembered how you felt, the fear,
right,
the shaking, the terror. So the feelings that accompanied the trauma, that you could access, but you never did access the actual memories of the rape.
Well, my abuse went on for a long time, and I've accessed through dreams and through flashes and stuff, moments of what happened.
Okay.
It's interesting because dream exploration and working with my dreams was one of the most vital parts of my healing. And certainly when for many abuse victims, the victim is too young and too traumatized at the time of the abuse to attach any words or any sort of spoken language to the experience. And the abuse victim may also have been threatened by the perpetrator to remain silent. So this makes body memory, dream images especially important, as many times being the only way that the survivor is able to access the trauma and process it. And actually, there's I worked with my dreams in therapy. I would write my dreams in my journal. I would talk to my therapist about them and always have these very strong emotional releases. And that's mostly where the energy would be coming from. Other people will use different tools. Actually, there's a very good book out called The Dreaming Way that was put together by psychologist and author Patricia Rice and a professional artist, Susan Snow. And this book follows their journey, Snow's 2-year journey of healing from her abuse to her dreams and art therapy. Mm-hmm. And the art therapy is the tool she used to bring the images from the dream world into her conscious awareness so that she could process it and release it. As a child, when these things are happening, you don't know what sex is. You can't give name to these experiences, which makes it all the more traumatic and makes it all the more necessary for you to stick this stuff somewhere in your psyche, in your body, in your mind, someplace to keep yourself safe. And when it's apparent as a child, you can't think to yourself that this parent is bad, because your survival depends on this person, these people. So you have to keep these people in a place where they will be safe for you, which makes dissociation all the more likely and all the more powerful as a way for you to keep yourself safe and for you to have a way that you can grow up and live a life. And then when you become an adult, the dissociation is a survival mechanism, and it's very vital and it's very important. It's a very good thing for the child. As an adult, dissociating becomes very traumatic to your adult responsibilities. You don't want to, you know, be going around doing your things and then dissociate into some other aspect of your personality. You want to be able to resolve that trauma, resolve the dissociation, and be able to function on a more holistic level.
That's a wonderful description, right? So you want to open up all the doors and introduce all the feelings and all the parts of yourselves to each other and integrate them. That's really, really, really good. So now, You also said in the chapter on feminine forces that you struggled with anorexia and bulimia. And these eating disorders obviously are linked to the abuse that you suffered. Now, a lot of people may not understand how. So say a few words about that.
Yeah, actually, there's an article that I link on my website from the Canadian Women's Health Network that's called Remembrance of Things Past, The Legacy of Childhood Sexual Abuse in Midlife Women. And in this article, writers talk about the way Sue Bloom, who's the author of Secret Survivors, describes many women with a history of childhood sexual abuse as being at war with their bodies. Shame, disgust, feelings of powerlessness. As you pointed out, actually, Dr. Turndorf, in your segment on childhood sexual abuse, these are just some of the very difficult emotions many survivors deal with on a daily basis. And for me, this is spot on. When I look back at my life, I can see how feelings of shame and disgust were there with me for as long as I could remember. Disgust over the way I looked, the way I felt, my menstrual cycles, everything about my body, and even eating. And actually, it was way before I started having anorexic tendencies, when I was around 9 years old, that I remember beginning to feel ashamed of eating. I was ashamed of even feeling hungry or the need or desire to eat. And I was overweight at that time, and I can remember feeling that it all seemed to be tied in some way to some awful thing about the sexual parts of my body, and, you know, that this was betraying me in some way. And not eating became a way I could control or repress that all the shame that I was feeling with my body, all the disgust. And actually, I've read that sometimes food is used by a perpetrator as a reward or bribe after episodes of sexual abuse.
Now, did that happen to you?
Well, you know, and it's interesting, even though I can't remember any specific episodes, I feel this is a very strong thing, and actually one of my earliest dreams that, and I know this will sound strange, about my abuse, because it won't sound like it's about my abuse, I had this dream about this candy from when I was a kid. I don't think it's around anymore. It was like striped, brown, white, and like pink. There was like a coconut essence to it. And my husband had come home, and I said, I had this dream about this candy. I told him what the candy was. He said, I remember that. I started to sob. I just broke down in the middle of the kitchen, and I started crying. So I do think that food was tied into this for me. And actually, with that as a self-injuring behavior, long before any of this, when I was in junior high, like around 11 or 12 years old, my girlfriend and I started taking prescription drugs out of her parents' medicine cabinet. Now, it's not like we were trying to get high on them or anything. We didn't even know what this stuff was. But
well, everything you're describing. You're describing in such an articulate way the way that food can be used to help regulate emotions. Because even there's this idea of, you know, stuffing it down and then wanting to vomit it out. You know, I want to get rid of it by purging the feeling out of me. And then even the self-shame that you're talking about and the self-attack, and I hate my body and I want to gain weight so that my body will just sort of be invisible and I won't be sexual. There's so many different layers to this. But even, you know, the way women will punish themselves and self-attack in the way they put down their self-image to themselves, this is, again, rage turned inward. You know, it's either going out or toward the object that you're mad at or back in on the self. So, I mean, you have done such a remarkable amount of healing that you are an inspiration. So let me just take a break. Sure. We'll be back in a moment on Ask Dr. Love Radio.
You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Dr. Jamie Turndorf. To speak to Dr. Turndorf live on the air, call 888-463-6748. That's 888-463-6748. If you've recently been through a breakup and are looking for a second chance, wondering how you can reconcile with your ex, or if it's even possible after all you've been through, Dr. Turndorf's latest book, Make Up, Don't Break Up, presents her five-step plan for reconciling with your ex. This plan was developed out of years of research, working with thousands of couples at her Center for Emotional Communication. This is a proven no-hype and no-nonsense method that gets right to the root of the problem to guide you to the right path towards reigniting a lasting relationship. For more about Make Up, Don't Break Up, visit AskDrLove.com. You're listening to Ask Dr. Love with Jamie Turndorf, PhD. Once again, here's Dr. Love.
Hello again and welcome back to Ask Dr. Love Radio. I'm talking with my guest, Linda Wisda, who wrote the memoir Menopause in Crisis. So, Linda, let's talk about how your book ends, because it ends at, we're on a precipice. You've entered a psychiatric hospital and that's where we're left. Now you are doing a sequel to this called Menopause in Crisis, The Journey Home. That's the memoir you're working on. And here you're going to tell people all about how you were able to come back from hell, basically. So can you talk? I know that you don't want to give away the book before, you know, you actually publish it, but can you talk a little bit about what were the mind-body practices that you engaged in and which ones stand out as being the most vital to your healing? Because I'm sure people who are listening who are struggling would like to hear about that.
Yes, it's very important to me. When I first came out of the hospital, actually, I was just as frantic and frenzied as when I went in. I came out and I told my sons I was going to have to go live in a group home because I didn't see any way for me to get well. And by that time, even though all throughout my crisis I wouldn't take medication, when I was in the hospital, I agreed to take all four of the medications that were prescribed for me. And I even managed to get a doctor to sign a prescription for bioidentical hormones. So I was taking six different medications and still my heart was still racing. My blood pressure was still soaring. I was a shaky mess. And it wasn't until I started seeing a very wise and very compassionate mind-body therapist that things began to change, and actually quite by accident, by whatever, I never expected it. After a couple of sessions, I don't know how far in, I was telling the therapist about a dream I'd had or some episode of abuse that I'd never forgotten. And while I was talking, I started to cry and shake, and I was shaking so bad that my teeth would chatter. And I went through this session, through this whole process of crying and shaking, and when it was over, I noticed that I felt the tiniest, tiniest bit more sane. I wasn't cured. I wasn't out of the woods, not by a long shot, but I could feel that something started to shift. And no one ever planned it. I don't even know if the therapist planned it, but that became the mainstay of my therapy, this mind-body releasing, mostly with my dreams. I would go in, I'd read a dream out of my journal, I'd remember something, I'd cry, I'd fall apart in there, and I'd pull myself together, and I'd go home and feel even more sane.
And but you know something, Linda, there's something really important about what you're saying here, because previous to this experience with this therapist, you were having memories, you were shaking, you were crying with boyfriends, you were journaling, but there was something about the connection that you had with this therapist where you were allowing yourself to remember and then describe your experiences to somebody who obviously understood you and validated you.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
And it was the relationship.
It was a huge, huge thing. Certainly I wouldn't have been there without that extraordinary relationship. And when I was, you know, with husbands and whatever, those were emotionally abusive relationships. There was no way that was going to help me heal. And actually, the boyfriend, husband's response to my remembering this abuse made it all the more necessary for me to bury that again. So I think it actually made the situation worse for me. But in the therapy, I was able to do this on a weekly basis. And when I saw how well that was working, then I started getting involved in other mind-body practices like massage and hypnosis, qigong. I started doing continuum movement. And at the same time, I was still doing yoga every day and doing my writing. And then I started going also to a support group for survivors of incest. So all of that together, and when I was in the hospital and I first got there, most of the people were much younger than I was, but most of them, all of them actually, had been in the hospital before, not just once, some of them two and three times, sometimes four and five. My roommate had been there 18 times in 2 years. I felt horrible about this and terrified that this was going to happen to me. So when I saw how well the mind-body practices were helping me, I immersed myself in every single one that I could. I was going to do everything possible to keep from having to go back to the hospital again.
So we're talking Chai Chi, Qi Gong, yoga.
Continuum, massage, hypnosis, creative writing, yoga. Yes.
Right.
Yes, and when I came out of the hospital, I was doing my yoga every day, and I kept track. I took note of this. I cried during my yoga every day for 15 yeah. months.
Yeah.
15
yeah.
months. I had so much. And, you know, it's funny, when I was married to my first husband, I don't know how many years had gone by, but I remember thinking to myself, look at me. I haven't cried in years. Aren't I emotionally healthy?
Yeah, right.
Oh,
you know, the thing
gosh.
Is, the men you married actually continued your code of silence, and it continued your abuse, really, because here you were in childhood suffering and having to bury your pain, and then you marry these guys who force you to stay in this emotional prison.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't relationships that were conducive to being able
right.
to let go of this stuff. And I think, you know, I had an inkling. Well, and I say that in my book, that I knew when I went to heal this stuff, it was going to be all-encompassing. And I was waiting until my sons got out of high school to do this. I thought, well, you know, that way, you know, they won't get caught in the backwash of everything, and I'll just focus on this, and it won't affect them. But, boy, I tell you, you know, menopause came along with its hormonal shift, and it had a whole different idea. And so
yeah,
I took the
it
journey
tells
when
you.
It said. Yep, exactly.
It tells you.
Yep.
You know, when it's ready, it tells you just lay down and let the
yep.
freight train run over you. And, you know, it's like it's breaking down all the
yep.
armor, all the defenses. It's breaking you down to break you open. You know, I say in the book that's coming out, you know, my book Love Never Dies, that there are many, many paths to breaking us open. For some, it's a physical sickness. For some, it's mm-hmm. grieving. You know, for some, it's the death of a loved one, a parent. Whatever it is, these freight trains are our spiritual wake-up calls, and they are giving us the opportunity to just open up more, dissolve mm-hmm. all the walls to loving better, loving ourselves better,
yes.
loving others better. Yeah.
Yes, because if we need to love ourselves to be able to love other people.
That's it. And, you know, one of the biggest impediments to loving oneself, it all comes back in a loop, is if you've got all this buried rage,
yeah.
well, then you're hating yourself, you're attacking yourself, your self-talk is horrible. So you have to be able to mobilize that. And I'm not saying go back to your parent. You know, I had a
right.
patient some years ago who was raped continually by his father, who was a minister, no less. And at the time, he had a therapist who told him, go back to your father, confront your father. Well, it was not the right thing for him to do.
Right.
Because all that happened was the whole family rallied around the father, and he got scapegoated and ousted. So it's enough for you to know how you feel.
Right.
Share it with a trusted friend, a therapist, journal about it, but you don't necessarily have to bring that anger and act it out on the person who perpetrated the abuse. That isn't always beneficial. Only just use the anger in a way that you know is going to be beneficial to you, the other person, and your relationship, not
exactly.
just venting and dumping. So then you're not riddled with all this rage turned back on the self. Now you really can love self better, and then you can go on to loving others. So you actually became, out of this whole experience, you took masters in transpersonal studies, spiritual mentoring, transpersonal hypnosis, yoga, Reiki. I mean, you have just gone on to become a veritable guru here. So.
Well, you know, it just seemed like the natural way to go when I saw that I was researching all of this anyway. And
right.
then I had this wonderful program available to me. I really wanted to go down that path. My therapist had started encouraging me to become a therapist early on in my healing. And when I started looking at some of the programs, as wonderful as traditional programs were, they weren't right for me at that time. I wanted to be able to keep exploring things that were happening for me then, the dream therapy, what was coming up for me in yoga and continuum movement. And that was a transpersonal healing program. So I went in that direction, and it was a fabulous journey.
Good. Now, so first of all, my webmaster created a little announcement, a graphic announcement for our interview. And since our interview is going to be archived permanently on my site, I'd like to send you this so that you can post it on your webpage, to your social media, so that your audience can forever come and listen to this interview with you, because you have done such a marvelous job. You speak so beautifully. You are so articulate. And I actually see in your future a public speaking career. I see this coming.
Well, thank you very much.
No doubt in my mind. And I want you to really, really think about listening to me on this and seeing to it that you make it happen, because the way you tell your story with so much honesty and open-heartedness and in such a clear way, you're going to help so many women. So tell everybody how to find you, how to find this book, your web coordinates, everything. So lay it on us.
Okay. Well, my website actually right now is not the same one that's listed in the book, because I'm having trouble. This is all new to me, figuring out the whole domain thing. Right now, my website is at menopauseincrisis.weebly.com.
Weebly? How do you spell Weebly?
Weebly, W-E-E-B-L-Y.com. And it's a web provider, a free website thing. And I went through there, and then when I saw all the issues with domains about privacy and security issues, I was like, oh, no, you know, I'm going to get identity thefted. So I'm still trying to figure that out. But right now I'm at menopauseincrisis.weebly.com. And always you can get me at my email address, menopauseincrisis@yahoo.com.
Okay, and your book, Menopause and Crisis.
My book is available on Amazon. It's Menopause and Crisis, The Summer I Lost My Mind. And I have a link to that on my website, as well as a link to the Canadian article that I spoke about. And I also have a page about body-mind menopause mentoring. I'm hoping to use my degree and my studies in yoga and whatnot to mentor other women who are going through difficult menopause experiences and help them to get some tools, some mind-body tools to help them along that journey.
That is so wonderful what you're doing. And if anyone also has trouble finding you, you'll be on my website.
Great.
And it's Linda with a Y, L-Y-N-D-A, Wisda, W-Y-Z-D-A.
Yes.
Right. All right. So I really, really enjoyed having you. I have a great respect and admiration for the journey you've taken, and I hope you'll stay in touch with me.
Definitely.
And continue sharing your ongoing evolution. And that's all I have for you this week on Ask Dr. Love Radio. Take care for now.